This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us from delivering powerful, meaningful, and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation, and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next-door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings, and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Macca and Nick Rees. Our next guest is Professor Sharon Lewin from the Doherty Institute. Good morning, Sharon. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Macca. I'm well. How are you?
Look, I'm pretty good. Look, I think like most of us, you know, we've come through most of COVID. It's not over. We know that. It's far from over. But we have, you know, a new challenge on the horizon, which is monkeypox. And I'm interested to hear from you around the, particularly around the epidemiology of monkeypox and how that is playing out, or you think it's going to play out in the LGBTQI plus community, but particularly amongst parts of that community. What are your thoughts, Sharon?
Well, just to sort of recap what's been happening over the last few months for some of your listeners. So the first cases of this outbreak of monkeypox were reported in May, largely based in Europe and initially from the UK. And over the last, you know, 6 weeks, we've seen numbers increase very quickly. The current most recent data suggests there's probably close to 2,500 cases in, you know, over 40 countries. And most of those cases, when sexual orientation has been collected, have been in gay men or men who have sex with men.
Okay.
So I think this is a big issue for the LGBTQI community, and it's a big issue for public health officials about how best to get the message out there without any, you know, discrimination as well. So it is challenging. We have been there before, of course, with HIV and some great partnerships around public health messaging that involves this particular community. So I know in Australia, you know, we're getting very active support from the community of how best to provide the messages for people to stay safe and protected from monkeypox.
Sharon, it's Nick Rees here. Why are so many of the cases being reported found to be members of the gay community? Is it got something to do with the nature of the disease, or is it because gay men are more likely to turn up to a doctor if they are suffering a particular condition? What's the latest thinking on why so many cases do seem to be reported in the gay community?
Yeah, look, it might be a mixture of both. First of all, monkeypox spreads through transmission of the virus by direct contact with a lesion. So monkeypox gives you this rash with little blisters, and those blisters are full of viruses. And if you contact those blisters, you know, skin-to-skin contact, there's a risk of transmission. So the virus can stay on external objects like bedding, for example, and contact with contaminated bedding can cause transmission. And then it can also be respiratory transmission, but that needs much longer exposure. And monkeypox traditionally is spread from animals to humans, not from monkeys. It's usually from rodents to humans. And we see these episodic transmissions and very small outbreaks that have largely been in Central and Western Africa. And this time the monkeypox has entered a community where there is a higher chance of close contact through sexual exposure. It doesn't actually mean it's transmitted sexually, but I think the close physical contact and then travel of people that have been exposed. The other thing is a long incubation period. What I mean by incubation period is the time between you're exposed and the time that you show symptoms is between 7 and 21 days. So you could have been exposed 3 weeks ago and then, you know, off in another part of the world within that period of time, and that's what led it to spread quickly. Added to that, as you say, yes, gay men traditionally look after their health really well. They're very familiar with risks, public health risks like HIV, and so more likely to be seeking medical care. But I don't think that's the explanation. I think it's managed to enter a community where there's a potential for transmission, and then international travel amplifies that.
And Sharon, in addition to being the head of the Doherty Institute here in Melbourne, you're also one of the world's leading researchers around HIV. And so you know well the history of humanity's response to HIV in the 1980s and 90s, where health officials failed to act with necessary urgency when HIV emerged. We saw gay communities decimated by the disease, and then you had gay men being blamed for spreading HIV. What are the lessons from that experience which should inform us in our response to monkeypox and its current prevalence in the gay community?
Yeah, look, I very much hope and I'm confident we're not going to see the same kind of response we saw in the early 80s. I mean, the good thing about the HIV response has been, you know, the empowerment of gay communities, their unbelievable skill in conveying public health messaging and working with, you know, clinicians and scientists to get the message out there. And absolutely, we do not want to see a repeat in any way of discrimination here. Even though it's largely affecting, you know, predominantly affecting the gay community. And interestingly, there's a number of levels of discrimination here. First of all, the potential sources of discrimination, which we have to actively make sure doesn't happen. But first of all, working in partnership with gay communities to get the right messaging out there so that people are not terrified. They should absolutely not be terrified. The most important thing is that they're aware of it so that they can detect it early, see their doctors and therefore not transmit it. So high awareness of the disease is the most important thing here. And now there's another layer of discrimination in that we talk about the Central African clades and the West African clades. So there's two different strains of monkeypox, and the WHO are looking at renaming that, just like we renamed the South African strain of COVID, et cetera, so that there isn't discrimination against place. And actually, the third thing is that, you know, monkeypox doesn't come from monkeys, so they're also thinking about renaming the virus altogether. But I think the key to this is really is partnership in how best to get the messaging out there.
Why is it called monkeypox if it doesn't come from monkeys?
Poor little monkeys. Well, it was first described in a colony of monkeys in the late 1950s, and in a sort of a captive colony of monkeys. And then the first human cases were identified in the 1970s. So what's been really interesting in this outbreak, and I think this is a consequence of what was built over COVID. So most countries at the moment are getting the full genetic code of the monkeypox and then reporting it, just like we have been doing with these variants for COVID. And most of the 2,500 cases that have been reported are a single strain that's come from Europe. But there are these up strains that have been identified in the US, suggesting that transmission events may have been happening at a higher frequency than we even knew about. And so there's what we call spillover from animal to human, you know, largely rodents to human, and then one takes off, like we've seen in this current outbreak. So it may have been in humans a lot longer than we've really thought it has been.
And Sharon, just changing topics, in breaking news this morning, we're hearing that the Victorian government is going to announce a raft of changes to COVID-related rules in Victoria. In particular, they're announcing, we understand, third dose mandates for people working in education, food distribution, meat processing and quarantine facilities. So there'll be a requirement for a third dose of vaccination against COVID. We also understand that masks will no longer be required to be worn in airports, but will remain mandatory on aircraft. What's your view about those changes?
Well, I think they reflect the kind of overall shift in our COVID strategy, which is protecting vulnerable populations and not going after locking transmission aggressively. That's really the shift here. And on the third dose issue, we know that being completely vaccinated against COVID requires three doses. That gives you the best protection against disease, including from Omicron. And the uptake of third doses in Australia has been pretty good, but nowhere near as good as the first and second doses. We're sitting at around 70% higher levels for older people, which is great. But I think that's what's driving this requirement. It will reduce sort of time off work and illness, really, by the third dose. It's controversial, that mandates, you know, are they the best way to get people to be vaccinated? My general feeling is probably not. You know, you're best off to work with communities, get the message out there, get trust that why and understanding why you need the third dose. But in some areas, you know, what we've seen previously, that mandates had a big impact for us, at least, you know, in Victoria, we didn't use them across the country. And the, you know, the relaxation of mask wearing is related to the likelihood that masks do add something to reducing transmission, but the additional benefit in reducing transmission is small, and that's why they're moving towards relaxing masks. I think we will still see masks in high-risk settings with vulnerable people, particularly hospitals and aged care. I don't see that going at all.
We're out of time, Sharon. Sorry about that. Look, I want to thank you for making the time this morning to speak to us, especially about monkeypox, but also, you know, your previous work in the HIV, you know, has really been incredible. It has saved lives. So thank you for all the years of commitment you've shown to that. And we hope to speak to you again real soon.
That's great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.